from the Stoic Manual, The Four Ways to Boost Your Resilience. When life hands you lemons, ask for a bottle of tequila and salt. You will recall how impregnable your mind is when it withdraws into itself and steadfastly refuses to do what it doesn't want to do, even when its refusal is unreasonable. Free from passions, the mind is a veritable fortress. A man cannot find a more secure place to take refuge and remain unassailable forever. Ignorant is he who fails to see this, and truly ill fated is he who sees but fails to take refuge. Marcus Aurelius. I was 72 hours deep into this challenge my best friend gave me. Or it was the 80th hour. I can't remember. My vision was hazy. Thoughts to quit had gotten louder. I sniffed defeat. I was unsure about partaking in the dare from the outset, as I didn't see any value in it. Therefore, I didn't train as well as he did. I also foreshadowed I'd be inefficient with my daily tasks while fighting the temptation to break the fast. And I knew better than to fight many battles simultaneously. That's the economy of war. I had it all figured out with excuses. Channeling the trickery of Odysseus, he asked me whether I had heard of Seneca's words saying, I judge you unfortunate because you have never lived through misfortune. You have passed through life without an opponent. No one can ever know what you are capable of, not even you. A little perturbed, I said I did, and I was living the philosophy in other ways. But missing food for 120 hours without any reward was crazy. You're crazy, I told him. 9th February, the challenge day, arrived faster than I expected. Interestingly, as if I had taken on the fast unconsciously, I got so busy, I forgot to eat. I was also too lazy to cook that day. In the calm, youthful evening, as I gazed at the beautiful twilight, staying strong while getting smacked by the aroma and sizzle of fried meat from my neighbor's house, I convinced myself to go on. I called my friend and told him I would be participating. We're on. I started the clock. I decided to be strategic with my approach by not letting the weight of the whole event crush me. I'd take it a day at a time, a moment at a time, breathe at a time. Don't let your imagination be crushed by life as a whole, Marcus Aurelius would tell himself. Don't try to picture everything bad that could possibly happen. Stick with the situation at hand and ask, why is this so unbearable? Why can't I endure it? You'll be embarrassed to answer. Day one was easy. Day two, peasy. Hunger was non-existent. I was also enjoying the endorphin high. My energy was steady throughout those days as I was sharp in the lengthy hospital ward rounds and my productivity was at an all-time high. The momentum was exciting, and I knew I had this challenge by the chokehold. What's the worst that could happen? Yo, I had spoken too soon. Day three got interesting. It was when I felt the heaviness of what I had gotten myself into because, dear reader, part of the challenge was that we still had to lift at the gym and work. Fatigue had encapsulated my being when I woke up. I thought it would fade on my way to the gym, but its adhesiveness was stubborn. The warm-up was a struggle. Setting up the weights was a chore. I felt miserable. It was apparent I was down bad. Like Ken Carson, I was fighting my demons. I wanted to go back to sleep. My friend pointed out that he could see me going through it. He laughed, called me a wuss, hoping it would trigger some anger and ketosis. I laughed back at myself in agony. I thought, do I go on and experience what it feels to win, or break the fast, because this was not looking good. I was at crossroads, and I had to make a choice. Fast. Suddenly, it hit me that I didn't control how I felt. The gloom and decline in energy was an inevitable physiological phenomenon resulting from the fast. And in wishing the state away, I was focusing on the wrong thing. I was trying to change the impossible. My best bet for survival was guiding my attention and effort on what I did control, my response. I decided to love and get comfortable with what I felt. Being a rebel, that was the most audacious and atrocious thing I would do despite this obstacle. It was a chance for me to practice courage and confidence, to hold my head up high and shake off the torment like it was nothing. This act renewed my energy, and the results came in the second set of the bench press when it got easy. I even told my friend to help me add more weight for the third set. He smiled knowing we were about to destroy this session. With a smirk and like a shark tasting blood, I knew I was back. How could I not be proud? The day was young and I had conquered the worst. Part of me even wished it would happen again so I could feel myself overcome. It was beautiful. When future set, I'm at a stage in my life where I feel like I can conquer anything and everything in the intro of Diamonds Dancing. I felt that. The rest of the 120-hour fast felt good and simple, and at the end of it, as I ate some eggs to break my fast while playing some Lana Del Rey in the background, reminiscing about the hell I just went through, I felt I had earned more audacity and drive to do whatever I wanted. With courage, confidence, and more love, this event had fundamentally changed me. I felt invincible, that nothing could hurt me. The challenge also helped me see the essence of a strong brotherhood. Had my friend not been noble enough to want to challenge himself? It's time you realize, Marcus Aurelius wrote, that you have something in you more powerful and miraculous than the things that affect you and make you dance like a puppet. And below is a breakdown of lessons you can draw from this story which will help you endure and make the most of the pain and deep pressure you could be going through or will experience in the future. Had he pitied and implored me to go back to sleep, I wouldn't have felt what I did, which was better than any material reward. It was a spiritual experience, priceless, an illuminating event I knew I'd draw on for much-needed strength on a dark day. Things cannot touch the soul. They have no access to the soul. They cannot produce our judgments. They are outside of us. They themselves know nothing, and by themselves they affirm nothing. Marcus Aurelius, nothing can get to you. Not pain, not endless temptations and distractions, and not the words of rude people. At the same time, you can't help but feel the initial eruptions of what has happened. This sting is inevitable. You're human, but because you have the powers of reason, you can stop the emotions where they stand. You can be free. And this is how you gain mind control. Ancient Stoics classified matters into what's within our control and what isn't. The former should be your major concern since it holds the keys to your well-being, and you ought to ignore the latter. Among the things within your control are your thoughts, judgments, and opinions, and those not within your control are the weather, what people say and do, and if your business will thrive or fail. Further still, among the things not within your control There are some you can have a degree of influence on the outcome, while others are fixed. For example, your business has a high potential to thrive if you work hard and tap into the right market, while you can't do anything to influence the weather however much you pray. It's because of separating matters, or lack thereof, between what you control and what you don't that people have different reactions to the same situation. Think of the story about Seneca who, when young, used to get asthma attacks that almost left him for dead. Do you know what he did? Gasping for breath on his bed, he fully embraced the asthma attack and even wished for death itself if that was destined to happen. Crazy, right? I know, but through rational surrender to what fate had imposed on him, he got the upper hand and emerged from the experience stronger than ever having.